Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Monday. You're listening to The Garden of Enlightenment with Louie Wildove. Unfortunately, Louie Wildove is under the weather and won't be able to host the show today. So you're listening to Gray Eye Smith as I host The Garden of Enlightenment. This is a late night poets presentation. We are a group of poets on allpoetry.com. And we have anthologies available on amazon.com. So feel free to check those out and help support these shows. That said, tonight's show is based on carryovers from my contest, The Midas Touch, Poet with the Midas Touch, or The Midas Poet. And, so these are carryovers from that show and some open poetry as well. And so I'm going to go to the list here and grab the first poem. I'll post this into the group. Okay, there we go. This is called Founding Manuscripts by Gronwy. Founding Manuscripts. Destination not quite known by the pen and ink. Forgotten lines of mysteries and stories still not found. composed in haunted poetry, Hitchhiking Through the Gates of Time, Stolen from the Hands of Clocks, Written on the Virgin Page, A Consummation of the Words, Naked and Seduced by Poems, In the Dark, Turning into Foundling Manuscripts, Seeking Out Sanctuary for the Pen and Ink, and A Ranting Misspelled Alphabet, Hiding Its Scriptorium in a monkish cell of papers, pinned to walls, mumbling to the clocks of time, playing a game of right and loss with the ink and pen, weaving into final lines, ink spots on the virgin page, shouting at the dark. Well, that was a fantastic and imaginative description of the writing process and the things that a poet goes through in their journey to create poetry. So I thought it was fascinating. And I'm just going to check the studio here and see if we have any callers. And nope. So I will just grab the next one and post it. Okay, here we go. Posting this. Okay, this is called The Blue Queen Butterfly by Sohrab Riazada. Air is quiet, a silent hush. I can hear soft, muffled claps of myriad tiny little tiny wings, suspended puffs of pollen dust. Over yon slopes of rolling hills, red fairies come dancing in. They surf the gentle mountain winds, flirting with nodding daffodils. She flutters light with grace, zeist, lone splash of bright Prussian blue, a dash of brilliant royal hue in the midst of yellows, in the midst of reds. Clearing my window's frosty pane, I melt into the radiant dance, pure blue amongst red and golden lamps. Despair recedes, my pains are gone. Gold daffodils bob and dance, dazzling azure queen enchants. Red courtiers abound, they flitter around. Veil sinks deep in a scarlet trance. That was quite beautiful. Powerful descriptors, and I love the storyline of this queen that is so majestic against the background. Just fascinating, absolutely fascinating, right? Done with skill and very well achieved. So that was beautiful. Okay, and we have a caller. Hello, Naomi.
Hello. How are you?
I'm doing great, thank you. Thank you for calling in.
No problem.
Did you get a chance to hear that last poem?
No, I just got there online when you were finishing your commenting.
Oh, okay. Thank you. And so I'd like to say hello to Frank in the group. And that was just a beautiful write by Sohrab Riazada. Beautiful. Shout out to Frank. All right, so I'm going to post the next poem, and if you wouldn't mind, please, Naomi, when you see it.
Okay.
There we go.
Don't Look Back or Fail by Robert Pulleski. Why did you look back? Or fail, why? You had your music more powerful than siren songs. All were stopping when you played your nine-string lyra. Leaves on the trees were freezing silent. You carried the music of the earth in the abyss that buries all of sound and silence. Submit as heartless Hades to the music, yielded to the dictation of a song, made him listen with rapt attention. You'd have your dice back in just few steps more on your way out of Hades' lair. Few flagstones at the entrance could feel the fresh air on your hair, on your face. Good man, but impatient. Now all is lost, crossed with black, black upon black. Why did you turn back? Hesitated for that instant moment with the bend of your face, all swept into nothingness. End poem.
That was a beautiful reading, Omi. And how haunting is this, right? You know, when somebody's, you know, been sent to Hades and, you know, the dictation of a song made him listen with rapt attention. And then, you know, you find your way out and you can feel the fresh air on your face, but you're impatient. Now all is lost, crossed with black upon black. Why did you turn back? Hesitated for that instant moment with the bend of your face all swept into nothingness. Yeah, just a haunting, right? And what did you think, mm-hmm. Naomi?
Yeah, I think this is a masterful stroke here. It's an interesting how he said Orfeo and not Orpheus. I wonder if that was, I don't know. I'm trying to read his comments here. He says, yes, Orfeo is kind of short for Orpheus. More correct should be Italian Orfeo, as in the couple of operas, Monteverdi's L'Orfeo and Willibald Gluck, Orfeo and Eurydice. But it could just be any name, as this is a story about someone not able to follow a simple direction. Ah, so that's his answer right there in the comment. Yeah, this is so well worded throughout and just so beautiful. Just an amazing, amazing right. But Robert Pileski, I mean, I'm a fan of his writing. He's just so, so deep all the time and so eloquent in his writing and just beautiful.
Well, that was a wonderful comment. Thank you, Naomi. I'm going to grab the next poem here. And this is by a poet called Old Faithful. And it is entitled, it's called Insomnia by Old Faithful. The frozen garden glows in the winter moonlight. My bird beetle feeder rattles on its chain in the lilac tree. That's what stirred me from my bed. Still groggy, I think about the tiny claw marks on the side made by a gray squirrel as he clawed furiously from a thin branch, reaching his hands into the tray to pick out sunflower seeds. Tail upright, feet clutching like steel rings as he perched precariously. When I banged on the window, he jumped in a flash, running in the snow across the fence top like a steam locomotive barreling down the tracks, but only so far as the cedar hedge where he hid until the coast was clear enough to return. Now the dome of the night breathes heavily on the world, and we both must find a way to sleep in the cold. Mm. That was a beautiful, right, you know, very descriptive and fascinating storyline of this squirrel that, you know, is hanging with steel ring feet. Just a fabulous imagery. What did you think, Naomi?
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder if it's a deeper metaphor for, well, he talks about insomnia there. I guess, yeah. Now the dome of night breathes heavily on the world and we both must find a way to sleep in the cold. Yeah, I suppose, you know, when it's, you're suffering from insomnia. How do you say that word, Greg?
Insomnia.
Because in French, it's l'insomnie. So I was just, you know, insomnia. Okay. When you're suffering from insomnia, yeah, you're kind of like out in the cold, I guess, you know, you're, it's an awful feeling, you know, you can't get to sleep, you want to get to sleep, your brain starts rattling, and you know, the more you want to go to sleep, the less you can go to sleep, so... Yeah, I guess yeah. But this is just great though, his imagery in here and the metaphor for the locomotive, the like a steam locomotive barreling down the tracks, as he describes the little squirrel running. Yeah, this is a great write. I liked it very much.
Thank you, Naomi. That was a great comment. And I'd like to welcome Bobby to the show. Hello, Bobby.
Buonasera. Good evening.
Oh, hello, Bobby.
Hi.
Hello.
Bonjour.
And
did you get a chance?
Okay.
How many times I've watched the squirrel pillage my mom's bird feeder when I would visit her. We're thinking we both must find a way to sleep too, though, that this person has their window open because they sleep better with cold air. Yeah, my grandmother used to do that. Yeah, she'd sleep with the window open in the wintertime. Yeah, so
mm-hmm. So true. Fresh air helps. Yeah.
Oh yeah, I do too. I burrow. I cocoon. My father said he could never figure out how I could breathe because all I could see was when he'd look in my room with the top of my head.
It's so true. Me too. It can be cold. And then I'll put a ton of blankets, and the heavier it is on top of me, the better I feel, you know? That's how I am, too.
Yeah, it's got great visual imagery. I mean, you can, as you were reading it, I could envision the little guy in racing. And they do. They run so fast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
they do that. He said only so far as the cedar hedge where he hid until the coast was clear enough to return. I used to, when I lived in Arlington, have a bird feeder. And until I discovered that if you put cayenne pepper in the bird seed, that the squirrels won't eat it. I used to have a game I'd play. It was called target practice, and it involved the squirrel, the bird feeder, and a high pressure garden hose.
Yeah.
And I knock him off the feeder, and I chase him down the fence, and then when he thought he had the range on my hose scoped out, he'd stop. And I watched him do this repeatedly for about a week. Then I reeled out more hopes and just brain screwed.
this is a great
piece, great visual imagery. I really enjoyed it.
Yes, really.
Absolutely. And so was your story. That great visual imagery.
Thank you.
All that going on. Would you read the next one for me, please, Bobby?
Oh, sure. Be glad to. You see where I am here. Got to find... Ah, there I am. Okay. Squirrels are dastardly. Ah, EJ's out there. Hey, EJ. Call in. Come on, girlfriend. Okay. We've got The Delayed Harvest by Samir Ahmed. Oh, okay. The Delayed Harvest. My happy days ahead are still staring at your hands, waiting for a signal to start. My smiling dawn is still waiting intently for the light of your gleaming eyes to allow its appearance. My daylight is still counting the days until your bright smile commands it to illuminate my dim roads. My eloquent words are still longing for your heartbeat to be engraved on the pages of my blank years. My home is still in readiness for the command of your soothing voice to be erected on the solid rock of the sharp fissure away from the bottomless abyss. My lost loved ones are still in anticipation for the warmth of your presence to be joined together around the fireplace during the cold winter nights. The withered leaves of my deserted city gardens are still in wait for the passing of your spectrum to breathe life into them again. My solitary walk amid the uncaring crowd is still longing for the joyfulness of holding your tender hands to make my lifelong dreadfulness fade away. The delayed harvest of all the past seasons is still waiting for your coming to produce its yield. End poem.
Beautiful read, Bobby. And, you know, this is a fabulous poem, you know, filled with love and devotion and honor and, you know, the beauty in his partner, you know. And then my solitary walk amid the uncaring crowd is still longing for the joyfulness of holding your tender hands to make my lifelong dreadfulness fade away. You know, when somebody's holding somebody's hand and being with them, it can wash all that away. That's a powerful thing. I thought it was beautifully done. What did you think, Naomi?
Oh, wow. This is amazing. Just the longing in it, the feeling of a, just the you know, the like, you know, it has a kind of like a sadness throughout it, you know, the longing, the delayed harvest of all the past seasons is still waiting for you, for your coming to produce its yield, to make my lifelong dreadfulness fade away. And it's so tender and loving, but still sad, and you know, in the longing he has here for this person, I guess. And you know, it's so beautifully written. Wow, this is the first time I read Samaramim, but yeah, I'll be looking forward to more of his writes. This is just amazing.
Great comment. Thank you, Naomi. And Bobby, what did you think?
His writing reminds me of Cahil Gibran. I was thinking of a passage that Gibran wrote, something similar. It says, I think it goes, what is it to work with love? It is to weave the cloth with threads drawn from your heart, even if your beloved were to wear that cloth. It is to build a house with affection, even if your beloved were to dwell in that house. It is to sow the seeds with tenderness and reap the harvest with joy, even as if your loved were to eat the fruit. It is to charge all things you fashion with the breath of your own spirit. Work is love made visible. And that's what his verse reminded me of, that passage by Gibran. It is the same very loving parallel. I mean, his existence revolves. She is the nucleus of his world. He orbits. She is the center of his orbit, and it is so beautifully and lovingly worded that I'm going to tuck this one away. It's a gorgeous ride.
Mm-hmm, indeed.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you, Bobby. And that was a great comment, as well as a good, excellent read. Thank you. Okay, so this next one is by JEG 325. It's called No Beginning, During, and Ending. Lightning streaks across charcoal skies that had been sunny moments before. A page on my calendar, stuck in infamy, the day love crashed on never shore. Winds roared like angry bees buzzing rain pelted my broken heart's window. Images circling above, a dark reminder. Swarming blackbirds, unable to let go. Change of this past, foreign country, now the resident of an abandoned city, lost behind walls smashed by a tempest, angrily whirling where love used to be. Within my fortress, daylight fears to go. Right now, tomorrow doesn't even exist. There is no beginning, during an ending. Crashing thunder announces I'm not even missed. End poem. Well, if that isn't rip your heart out, you know, that brings a pang of sadness to you in the end, especially with the ending. And there's no beginning during the ending. Crashing thunder announces I am not even missed. Yeah, sad when relationships come to an end. And Naomi, what did you think?
I think there's beautiful metaphors in this all throughout. And beautiful imagery, two lightning streaks across charcoal skies. And then a page on my calendar stuck in infamy. The day love crashed on Never Shore. The way he took this and he compared it to like a city in ruins with walls smashed. And an angry storm, you know. This is really just a brilliant write, I found. And I see that it was a made front page pick. Very well deserving indeed. Just a brilliant write all through. There's a very deep and emotional, this write. And right to the last line. So very, very... Bravo on that, JG.
Thank you, Naomi. And Bobby, what did you think?
Oh, I think this is a stunning write. The visual imagery is vivid. Lightning streaks across charcoal skies that had been sunny moments before. It just starts out great, and it just continues to crescendo all the way through. Winds roared like angry bees. Buzzing rain pelted my broken heart's window. What a beautiful metaphor. Images circling above, a dark reminder, swarming blackbirds unable to let go. His dark mood, he parallels to swarming blackbirds unable to let go. This is just such a beautiful, it's so forlorn and it feels so destitute, desolate. So bereft of hope. You can feel the angst and the anguish in this person's writing. Crashing thunder announces I'm not even missed. It's unquestionably a very desolate feeling that the protagonist left us with. I agree with Naomi. This is a well deserved front page pick.
Great comment, thank you. Okay, so I'm going to post the next poem here, and this has a SoundCloud, so we will listen to that. And this is by Martha Gettel. Here comes the SoundCloud.
What's on your mind? By Martha Gettel. You sat beside me and you kissed my cheek. Sometimes, baby, you'll even rub my feet. And from the look on your face I see there is no place else you'd rather be. Then you ask, babe, what's on your mind? And I have to bite my tongue one more time. 'Cause my heart is learning new melodies, and I'm afraid my heart wants to be free. I know it's getting closer every day, so I try to fight it in every way. I just don't feel the way I once did. It's getting harder to keep the truth here. I never meant to take my heart from you. We were going to go through forever, just us two. And man, how I hate to break your heart. Baby, I don't even know how to start. I know it's getting closer every day, though I try to fight it in every way. I just don't feel the way I once did. It's getting harder to keep the truth hid. Baby, it's breaking my heart in two. The things I'm gonna have to say to you. But I just don't know how to say. I thought about leaving you again today.
Bravo. That was a great sing. And I love the storyline in the song. It's, you know, it's heart-wrenching and it's painful, but it's forthright and, you know, stand-up-ish. But just fascinating, fascinating song. What did you think, Naomi?
Yeah, I love the line, because my heart is learning new melodies, and I'm afraid my heart wants to be free. That's a wonderful, that line right there, that's a wonderful way of, you know, of putting a metaphor for, you know, that your heart is going elsewhere, is singing a new song, a new tune, is ready for something new, you know. It's not dwelling anymore in the love that used to be there. It's going on to a new melody. That line right there is such a great line. Wow, Martha. And all through this song, you know, Martha writes so straightforward and so real and so, you know, so authentic. I just admire her songs one after the other. This is another one, you know. It's just great.
Great comment. Thank you, Naomi. And Bobby, what did you think?
I agree with Naomi. Martha's style is almost conversational. It's colloquial. Mm-hmm. It's like she's talking to you and telling you how she feels. And I know I've said this before, but it just still rings true. Her writing is so approachable. It's so down to earth. Very, very, very matter of fact, very straightforward. And she speaks her mind with such clarity. I never meant to take my heart from you. We were going to go through forever, just us two. I hate to break your heart. I don't know how to start. You get the sense that here's someone who knows the relationship is changed, but it is so hard to say. You know, it's one thing to think something; it's quite another to say it. And she does say that. She says, "I don't feel the way I once did. It's getting harder to keep the truth hid. I thought about leaving you again today," and she wants to say it, but she just can't. And she says this with such elegance.
Well, absolutely. Thank you, Bobby. And I'd like to welcome Frank to the show. Hello, Frank.
Hello. Hello there, my friend.
Hello. Hey, hello, Frank.
Hello there, Naomi. I know. Hello, Bobby, and hello there. Great. Good to hear you as well. Always a pleasure.
Better.
Yeah, there we go. All right.
Did you get a chance to hear Martha's song?
Yes, I was able to hear it, and I have to say, I agree with Naomi. You can never, you know, her songwriting is, you know, there's always a tune, a jingle, it feels like, to her, you know, to her beat, to her lyrics. There's always a very powerful message in this poem. I mentioned, you know, just the whole notion there of, you know, accepting the realization. But you're in a relationship, and that relationship practices, you're going different ways, different directions, you and your spouse, your mate, so be it. and you come to realization you don't know how to end it, and perhaps that individual doesn't see it as well as you. So I thought she did a wonderful, in that regard, she did a wonderful job there of just giving us heart-wrenching emotions, and very much very contemplative as well, because although it's a song and it's very lyrical, that message there of contemplating there, what she says there, I just don't feel the way I once did. It's getting harder to move, kid. That's really basically a poem. Yeah. So I think overall, as always with her poems, her songs have a beauty to them, but they also have a message to them.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you, Frank. Okay, Naomi, you're up next, please.
Okay, this is by Cal. Cal Smiles. Oh, I love Cal. Okay, a poem about Mother Nature, a mother's nature. Glowing hazel eyes rolling over blue periwinkle skies, clouds of white daisies, jasmine-scented air, breathe through tender-lipped smile airily, whispering breeze through leaf-jumbled trees, thrumming in. Around long-bladed grasses, Mother sings with the humming birds and insects in morning shine, brightens ripples on ponds, river and lake waters, refreshing the wildlife of a living forest of flowering vines. A blessing received from a mother, raining bougainvillea boughs, love. And poem.
Well, that was a beautiful read, Naomi, and a beautiful poem. You know, you can feel the love that she has for nature in this, and it really shines through quite beautifully. And Mother sings with the hummingbirds and insects in morning shine, brightens ripples on pond, river, and lake waters, refreshing the wildlife of a living forest of flowering vines. How beautiful is that? What did you think, Bobby?
The colors that she evokes in this and the visual imagery, just beautiful. She's got hazel eyes, periwinkle skies, white daisies, and she mm-hmm. she compares the clouds to daisies. And it's a very tactile piece. She's got jasmine-scented air, whispering breezes. With her visual imagery, she places you right in the setting with the poem, and you can hear the mother singing, humming along to her child. It's a very loving, very gentle, very beautiful piece.
Well said, thank you. And Frank, what did you think?
Oh, I thought this was a wonderful poem. I agree with what Bobby just said. It's very tactile. But it's also a beautiful write in regard that it speaks very directly to the wonders of nature, you know, and how Mother Nature in herself, you know, really inspires us, you know, in poetry, when it's written in this manner, it's even more beautiful because there's so much there of the elements of sorts here and the elements of experiencing nature. So, you know, the poem is not long. It's a brevity to me. But it is a wonderful, wonderful, I would say it's a wonderful ride of just being there, as what Bobby said, being there and, you know, and seeing there, just reflecting, just there, just entertain. I guess you would say enjoying yourself in the moment there around the wonders and the elements of nature. So this poem, I would have to say, I'm not certain if she's listening, but if she's not, if she listens afterwards, go, this is one of your best poems I've actually read from you.
Well, great comment and fascinating. No, just a great comment, but that beautiful, right? And Naomi, what did you think?
Yeah, this was just a delight to read, Cal. It's beautiful all throughout. I mean, the imagery here, the tenderness, you feel the love, like Bobby said. It's just so, and it flows. I mean, you know, when you read it, it just flow so effortlessly, you know. It's just like in the poem, it's tender, it's a whispering breeze, it's just like a mother's tender touch, you know, towards her child, her mother, her child, you know. It's like you feel the tenderness and the love and the all throughout this poem. It's just beautiful, Cal.
Thank you, Naomi, and I agree. Okay, Bobby, you're up next, please.
Okie dokie. The pause, the technical pause, is me getting off of mute. So I don't forget. I'm trying to be a good citizen and not turn things when you know, to keep myself in the background because I'm back here doing things like eating nuts. Okay, The Hand and Chains Writes Within by Daniel Deschino. The hand and chains writes within. I walk among the zombie hordes, a mask of emotionless armor, pilgrim in an unholy land, watching the mindless and motorized fight for supremacy and claw for the scraps of the dead. I hide in the corners of the crowds, a note taker, a scribe, a hunter of what has been. I the watcher, I the gatherer, I the keeper of what I have seen. Yet I am but one spark in the lightning bolt of the collective conscious of all that was. And like all sparks, I am here for an instant and then gone. End poem.
Beautiful read, Bobby. And that was an excellent write. You know, it's well laid out and a thoughtful write, you know, about, this is about finding an empty journal. And, you know, I thought it was fabulous, you know. You know, most of his writes are excellent work, and this is just no exception to that. Beautifully done. What did you think, Naomi?
Yeah, I'm along the same lines with you. Daniel always amazes me. Like, he always has this eloquence, you know, in his writing and in his, you know, the way he forms each line there and the way the flow and everything. It's just like a masterful stroke across the page every single time. And this is no exception. I mean, I just love this write. It's just, yeah, and like all sparks, I am here for an instant and then gone. And it's so true, you know, we're here on earth and, you know, in a clink of an eye, we've passed that time, you know. So this is just beautiful.
Thank you, Naomi. That was a great comment. And Frank, what did you think?
Well, I have to say that the poem, it's a very introspective piece. That first whole stanza, I would say that half of this poem took me into the Game of Thrones there for a moment there, just visualizing that. But then the poem afterwards went into a very deep introspective mode. And it's really deep and it's really delving into the mind, the psyche, you know. And this is one of these things that I always, I've spoken to him about this, Daniel, about the whole realm of the conscious realm, of, you know, the realm of consciousness. And I think he does an excellent job, you know, bringing in his rights, you know, that whole notion of the consciousness, you know. And this poem here really does get you, really makes you go on that road, that path, you know, of being consciously aware of your surroundings, of your experiences, but, you know, not only through perception, but also through thought. And I thought that he did a fantastic job. I like that notion there of I am here for an instant and then gone. It is exactly what one would think about when you think about life. It is there, it's here, but we never know when its finality comes. So in a sense, it is transient. And I agree with Naomi. he has a wonderful display, I would say, wonderful way of actually, you know, writing poems using philosophies and science, and he does throw in spirituality at times to his poetry, so he does an excellent job of that.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you, Frank. And Bobby, what did you think?
Oh, I enjoyed this. I wasn't quite certain at the opening where it was going. And, but I have the visual imagery that it conjured for me is I took him quite literally in the first stanza. Here's a survivor. You know what? That's what it is. He reminded me of the protagonist in Robert Matheson's novel, I Am Legend. Here is a man, the whole world is struck with a disease that renders them all vampires. He is the only one, because he was a scientist, he was working on an antidote, administered it to himself, and he is the only one that has not gone over to a vampire. And that first stanza reminded me of this man goes out during the day hunting these people, trying to keep them from finding him. And I hide in the corners, a note taker, a scribe, a hunter of what has been, the watcher, the gatherer, the keeper. That's what it reminded me of. And if you've ever read of anything of Matheson's work, it is visual imagery. It just it cleaves to this so closely that if you've read the book, you'd never forget it. It's actually been filmed three times. They've done a film of the same book.
Yeah, Will Smith did the last one that I saw.
The most recent one was Will Smith. Yeah, very very good. I did not watch that one. Specifically because I know what happens to the dog. I read the book first before I saw them. And then it was made in the early 70s with Charlton Heston, and it was called The Omega Man.
Oh, remember that.
They weren't vampires, but they were all stricken with this disease. And then the original one was actually with Vincent Price, and it was called I Am Legend. It was called The Last Man on Earth.
No, I haven't seen that one. I'll have to look it up.
That's the original. That's the original filming with Vincent Price. I think that was in the 50s or 60s. But yeah, three incarnations of that book. But seriously, you should read the book because like Daniel's work, the philosophy. In Daniel's work comes through, and in the novel I Am Legend, the philosophy of Richard Matheson comes through, and it's so memorable. I mean, I read it as a teenager; I've never forgotten it. So
wow.
This is a great piece. Very, and you
good.
Can tell it moved me.
Yeah, absolutely, and. Thank you for that wonderful comment, Bobby. Okay, so I know it's out of turn, but, you know, I'm going to put Frank's in because he's up next to read, so I'm going to play the song for 5 minutes.
Go for it.
All right, thank you.
Here comes the rain again, falling on my head like a memory, falling on my head like a new emotion. I wake up to the eerie echoes of its splash. I want to bathe in its dripping dewdrops, feel the moisture of its natural purity, enraptured in its divine mysticism, imbibed from its exotic substance. I want to dance in its choreography, listen to the sounds of its sweet symphony emerge tonight with the drenching water to my bare feet are covered in the petrica. Be the only lover of my longing passion, the woman of my eternal romance, the glow of seduction of my full moon, the fresh aroma of my beautiful rose. I'll chase the image of your sable shadow from the edges of the shore till I can see your glimpse like a wandering spirit. And I'll search for you as I can hear your whispers calling me to follow you where your love takes me. I want to walk in the open wind. I want to talk like lovers do. Want to dive into your deep ocean. Is it raining now? With you. Oh, I want to walk in the open wind. I want to talk like lovers do. Want to dive into your deep ocean. Is it raining now with you? So baby, talk to me like lovers do. Walk with me like lovers do. Talk to me like lovers do. Talk to me like lovers do. In the room.
Bravo, Frank, bravo. That was a beautiful
That's for the song there. I'm sure everyone's heard this song here, the Eurythmics Annie Lennox song. I just took a play on that, on that song.
Yeah. No, you can tell with the first verse and then the last ones. But no, it was beautifully done. Fabulous execution of, you know, your insertion of your stanzas along with the song really made it fascinating. Yeah. And it was beautifully done, Frank.
All right, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
No problem. And Naomi, what did you think?
Oh, I think what a beautiful take on the song. I mean, wow, you know, you kept the melody all through. And you could just hear the song, you know, like the, you know, as you were reciting the poem, you could just feel the song there. And you know, rain is so, how can I say it? So sensual, sensual and so. You know, the feel of rain and water, you know, it's just, you know, when it rains, like the pitter-patter, you know, whether it's against a window pane or whether you're in it, you know, just the feeling of rain running along your body. I mean, it's just so like a seductive, you know. And I love that part where you refer to the rain. And then when you go into, you keep on it when you bring in like the shore there, you have the water again and then the shadow, her shadow, and then on the shore. And then you bring in whispers into it. And then you bring in the wind. And like the wind that's blowing there. And this is just an amazing, amazing take on that song, Frank. And it's an amazing write, you know, with a beautiful language all throughout. Yeah, I was just enchanted listening to this all the way through.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much, sir.
Wonderful comment. Thank you, Naomi. And what did you think, Bobby?
Frank, I think this has a subtly different feel from your other body of works. It has a rhythm and a cadence that's, no, seriously, it is more like a slow dance than a salsa or a tango. Bodies move slowly in the rain. Be the only lover of my longing passion, the woman of my eternal romance, the glow of my seduction, of my full moon, the fresh aroma of my beautiful rose. I love that passage right there. That is just so beautiful. That's the love letter in the whole piece. And while this whole piece is sensual and seductive, its beauty compared to your other works is like comparing two beautiful. No, like, listen to me. It's like comparing two beautiful women. They're both beautiful, but they're beautiful in different ways. So I really like what you did with Annie Lennox's song. I think your rendition of it is really very well done. And while it didn't have any chocolate or caramel or wine in it, I think it carries well.
Well, the song didn't have that. That's the reason why the song didn't have that. But I thought the song in itself, if I can really briefly say, I thought the poem there obviously was a play on the song. But I really like the elements that was said here by, I believe it's Naomi. The rain can be a very sensual thing, but it's also a beautiful thing, you know. It's a romantic as well. It has these elements that just gives you just a wonderful sentimental display there. So this is where I took this song. That's how I took it from that angle there. You know, it was inspired by the song, and I did use some lyrics there, and of course I wrote some of my own lines here, but it was just a poem that was, it's sensual, but it's also romantic, and it's also one of these things that you have when, you know, what Naomi says, the rain does give you that effect.
Mm-hmm. I really think you did a very fine job on this, Frank. I really like it. I'm going to tuck it away in my favorites, and I agree with you. If anyone out there besides me has made love in a tent while it's raining, it's something you'll never.
Oh, <God.
laughs> it is magical.
It is. I think we can all agree, all of us. Certainly agree, at least.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
The rain, for sure. Okay, I've got the next right up. And it's by Jack Tonkovic, and it's called Smile. Skin makes my fingers smile as they dance and skate across chest, like butter across hotcakes, like whipped cream on hot chocolate, like cream cheese frosting on warm pumpkin bread, like water skier on a liquid lake, ice cream cone, like an ice cream cone, sliding off on a stifling August night, like skin makes my heart, my fingers smile. Wow, that was beautiful. You know, skin does make your fingers smile, and it does for me anyway. But I thought it was just fabulous, right, boy, Jack? And what did you think, Naomi?
Oh, yeah, this is beautiful. I mean, oh, my gracious, it just makes your, the reference here, the metaphor just makes your water, your mouth water, you know, butter across hot cakes, like whipped cream on hot chocolate, like cream cheese frosting, the warm pumpkin bread. Oh, my gracious, I'm hungry right now. But wow, you know, the way he compares the movement of fingers to all those things that I just said there, wow, this is just an amazing, amazing right. Sliding off on a stifling August night like skin makes my fingers smile. Oh, wow, you know, it's just amazing. Wow. Bravo, Jack. This is just amazing.
Thank you, Naomi. And Bobby, what did you think?
It's a very tactile piece. He starts out with his skin makes his fingers smile. And then he closes the same way, which I think is a great way to bring the piece around from the beginning to the end of itself. But in between, he gives us such a richness of visual imagery. They butter across hotcakes, whipped cream on hot chocolate, cream cheese broth, and it's all cool things on warm water skier on a liquid lake. Just the descriptions are so they're so vivid that you're drawn along with his descriptions, and he brings you right back to like skin makes my fingers smile. And like I said, he ends it the same way he begins it, which I think is a very elegant way to conclude a really elegant brevity.
Well said. Thank you, Bobby. And Frank, what did you think?
Well, I have to say that this is a wonderful, I think it's a masterful display of wordplay. You know, the usage of metaphors here, you know, he brings us there with the butter across hot cakes and, you know, the whipped cream, the hot chocolate, there you go, Bobby, the hot chocolate there, the ice cream cheese. I mean, I find it difficult at times for me, but I always admire those people who can use, you know, metaphors such as food, you know, elements of food into their poems, you know, and still be effective with that poem. And what I like about this poem is that, you know, the usage of wordplay there, using those metaphors there, you know, and to begin this with just my fingers smile as they dance and skate across death, you know, that has me going somewhere else. Then he brings us these two other lines that incorporate these elements of the food. But I like what he says at the bottom there. It says, makes my fingers smile. And he says on the AP, he says, hope this makes you smile as well. So he did. It's a very witty poem, and I thought he did an excellent job there, bringing his humor, bringing his. I did notice a bit of sensuality in his piece as well.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you, Frank. Okay, Naomi, your piece is up, if you wouldn't mind.
Okay. Do you have the SoundCloud, or do I read it?
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize I had a SoundCloud.
Okay, it's okay. I'll read it. I sing in the SoundCloud, but I won't sing here. Okay, piece together.
Go ahead, I'll do the pieces. Chorus in the background for you.
Okay. I walk into Alice's restaurant in my imagination or in a dream, sit at a little table in the corner, order a cup of coffee and some apple pie on the side. And I scribble upon a napkin, pieces together pieces of poetry, some old and some shiny brand new, some old and some shiny brand new, piece together pieces of poetry, some old and some shiny brand new. As outside raindrops drum upon shimmers of sunlight to the delightful beat of rainbowed umbrellas. Oh, dancing, dancing in the wind, up and down on glistening sidewalks. The trees are dressed in rusty reds and orangey yellows as beds of leaves lay at their feet, awaiting the blanketed softness of snow. As overhead geese honk, their hurdle V's fading into a black speck in the distant sky, as leaves tumble across lawns, to settle at the foot of a for sale sign in front of a now lifeless home where a trash bin stands at the end of its empty driveway like a huge period. And I scribble upon a napkin, piece together pieces of poetry, some old and some shiny brand new. Some old and some shiny brand new. I scribble upon a napkin, piece together pieces of poetry, some old and some brand and some new, some old and some brand new. And in the other corner, a heartbroken piano man in a raspy roar of a rock and roll refrain belches out the kind of love that turns umbrellas inside out. So you'd never dance singing in the rain. Flips over magician hats so you'd never again hum abra, abra, cadabra as the rain pelts the window panes and I see my beaten reflection mirrored in one single drop and I shudder under the rippling effect of me slamming that door shut and walking away from you, walking away from you, walking away from you, walking away from you. And I scribble upon a napkin, piece together pieces of poetry, some mold and some shiny brand new, some old and some shiny brand new. Piece together pieces of poetry, like rainbowed umbrellas dancing, shiny and brand new, glistening and dancing in the wind. End poem.
Wow, that was a beautiful read, Naomi. And how touching is this piece? You know, you pull you right into the heart and the soul of the character that's going through this. They sit and, you know, connect pieces of poetry. Together, and I thought it was just a fabulous, fabulous write. As I scribble upon a napkin, piece together pieces of poetry, some old and some shiny, brand new, just beautiful lines. And then when you go on about the piano man in a raspy roar of rock and roll refrain, belches out the kind of love that turns umbrellas inside out, and you'd never dance singing in it, the rain. Flips over magician's hat so you never hum abracadabra. Just fascinating, right? Beautifully done. What did you think, Bobby?
I don't know where to start. First off, from a technical point of view, this is a masterful piece of storytelling. It carries from beginning to end. It propels you through. You don't want to leave it until you get to the very end. And when it's over, you're sorry. You go back to the beginning and reread it. It's an evocative piece. The refrains give it a cadence and a rhythm that's musical. I don't know if that's intentional or
were the parts I sang.
okay. Reading them though is just as effective. It was very effective. The storytelling. The trees are dressed in rusty reds and orangey yellows, as beds of leaves lay at their feet. Awaiting the blanketed softness of snow, your visual imagery is just so vivid. Overhead geese honk, their hurtled bees fading into a black speck in the distance. I mean, each line. I'm loath to single out anything because it is woven together like this beautiful tapestry of words, like I said, the repetition of I scribble upon a napkin, it's haunting. It gives you the sense of walking away from you, or the rain pelts the window panes. This is what really caught me. As the rain pelts the window panes, I see my beaten reflection mirrored in one single drop. Shudder under the rippling effect. Boy, that one just... The visualization on that was just striking, and I'm getting too effusive on this. I mean, I really enjoyed it. I think you did a masterful job on this. This is a superlative piece of writing. compliments fail me. Words fail me. This is really great.
Thank you, Bobby.
Wonderful comment, Bobby. Thank you. And Frank, what did you think?
I have to say, I do believe I heard this rendition here, and not only the poem, but her singing, and it was a beautiful, beautiful rendition there. The poem really speaks to me about, you know, you know, not only of, you know, relationships, but it also speaks in a personal nature about, you know, not only being, you know, not only being inspired as well to write poetry, but as well perhaps a sense of therapy there. You know, you go through emotions there of a relationship, and you figure out that, you know, you need to somewhat release those thoughts, you know, those emotions, and you do it in such a delicate and such a magnificent manner using, you know, the paper of poetry here. And I just really like the lines where you say, and I scribble upon a napkin, piece together pieces of poetry, and you say, same old and some shiny brand new. You know, this poem just really is just, the metaphors are excellent as well. But I really thought it was very intense, very powerful. And it really brought me, you know, I've heard the piece, but just reading the piece here and hearing your voice there, which I thought was beautiful voice you have, was just brought me to just that really to that, you know, that personal nature there, you know, of actually seeing you doing this, you know, contemplating, you know, all of this is in your head and writing this and going to that place there of Alice restaurant there. Now, this was just very, very powerful, the imagery throughout the poem there, and I thought you did an excellent job here with this piece.
Thank you, Frank. Thank you so much.
Are you okay?
Thank you, Frank. And Naomi, would you like to say anything about your poem?
Well, you said a lot. I don't know if you got the reference there the song Singing in the Rain and the song Abracadabra. Yeah,
yeah,
you probably got that.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And this is actually pieces of different pieces of poetry that I've written. Some new in this and some old. So it is actually a made-up poem from pieces and parts of old poetry and new poetry. Yeah. Pardon me?
That's called a pastiche.
What a pastiche.
I'll write it down for you.
Pastiche. Write it on the board?
Yeah.
And I thought
the poem
was about you there.
Okay. I don't see it. I'll have to refresh, I guess.
Give me a moment, dear. My fingers are old.
Oh, okay. No wonder. I was looking for this.
Oh, especially since I see that I'm up next. I'm up next. Am
I? Yeah,
so
you are. Yeah.
Like, should I jump in?
Yeah,
yes, sure. Spotlight is yours.
That's such lovely, serious poetry that I feel like I'm going to disturb the feng shui of the whole program with my satire here. This is, I will preface it by saying that this was written a couple of years ago based on a story a friend of mine told me. His spouse is a social butterfly who loves going to all these holiday gatherings and making appearances and impressing the flesh and, you know, what have you. And this gentleman would just as soon not, but he trails along, and he sent me a text that actually was the genesis of this whole poem that I wrote to him and for him. So it's called Command Performance. And you'll see at the end of each stanza is the protagonist's comment. Social obligations of the season. Specious reasons to visit people you don't seek out for the rest of the year. So what have you been up to? Host and hostess greet you at the door. Air kisses and awkward hugs are rendered, and alas, nowhere to deposit your coat. Oh, just drop it on the guest bed? Swell. Surroundings overly festooned and adorned with profuse evidence of the holidays, inherited ancestral decorations excesses of the season. How lovely, so imaginative. Guests vainly attempt to maneuver about in the gathering while not upsetting any strategically located breakables. Uh-oh. Oh, damn. Sorry. Surrounded by vacuous smiles, vapid persiflage, and banal banter of friends you aren't really acquainted with. Have we met? Didn't think so. Attempts to mingle are abortive, resulting in a corner armchair as you are resigned to a light conversation with a potted palm tree. Were you here for this last year? Bourbon flowing as a tributary to the river of wine, guests select their social lubricant or liquid anesthetic of choice. Glasses are never unfilled. What are you drinking? Want another? Gastronomic tour de force on platters piled high are replenished with astonishing regularity, giving the impression of a never-ending source. Elves in the kitchen, perhaps, and more excesses of the season. If I took some home, would anyone notice? Elaborate edible offerings on fancy trays for fingers to quickly steal a bite or two between superficial conversations no one will remember tomorrow. Small talk abounds, decidedly minuscule small talk. Someone who believes they can play the piano gets conscripted into their rendition of the popular holiday songs while partygoers bray their own cacophonous accompaniment. Communal caroling, how festive. Crowded into close quarters, space to navigate the throng of guests is virtually non-existent. Claustrophobia is the order of the evening. Forgive me, dear, was that your foot? Only those experienced in the social dance of false cordiality with subtle nods of the head and furtive eye contact execute the moves with aplomb. Battle-weary, social gathering veterans. Pardon me, excuse me, how lovely to see you. Credit full marks are awarded for being present and conspicuous at the festivities. As the first opportunity presents itself, surreptitious escape is arranged, and a stealthy tactical retreat into the darkness is executed. And just where was my coat? Social commitments payable to obligatory reality have been remitted once more. The gustatory, auditory, and olfactory assaults are at an end, and a temporary torpidity to recover after the new year is prescribed. Tell me again why I keep attending these things. Damned if I know. And
beautifully done, Bobby. Fantastically read. And, you know, your situational humor is divine. You know, bourbon flowing as a tributary to the river of wine, guests select their social lubricant or liquid anesthetic of choice. Glasses are never unfilled. What are you drinking? Want another? Beautifully done, Bobby. Excellent write. Excellent read. And Naomi, what did you think? You bet.
Oh, I love the one with the, was that your foot? Pardon, where was it? Oh, my gracious.
Forgive me, dear, was that your foot?
yeah, excuse me, dear, what was that, your foot? No, but I love how you wrote, you know, all about the, you explained, you used the amazing wording to describe, you know, descriptive words that describe these events, and then you end it with this, you know, like this, you know, like really straightforward, you know, like person talking, you know, after it, it makes it stand out so much, you know, it makes the piece so great and so funny. Like I was laughing through the whole thing. I was trying not to laugh too hard, but this is just amazing, Bobby.
Thank you.
Yeah, I just love this. Oh my gracious, it's so unique. I never saw anything like it. It's so unique and it's so entertaining and then just delightful. I mean, this is just made me laugh. So it's just amazing. Brilliantly written.
Thank you, Naomi. And Frank, what did you think?
Well, first of all, I have to say bravo. Bravo, because this was a fabulous write, fabulous read. I thought this was just one of the best satirical pieces. I was completely amazed by the potential of this poem. You know, I like the dialogue, the consistent dialogue. That little wordplay in the dialogue was one of those things that I really admired a lot about this piece here. You just always have a superb sense of creativity in your writes, whether it's, you know, any genre you write, you always bring such, I would say you have this genius quality of writing that's very much enviable, very much envious, make that. And I really like this poem here because it really made me, just that whole imagery. The imagery throughout this poem was very much, was very impressive. I thought about Oscar Wilde, you know, when I read his satirical pieces, you know, his pieces there on satire, you know, this reminds me of a Wildean type of satirical poem or satirical write, make that, because he usually wrote prose. And I really like this piece here. Really just, not only is it was it funny, you know, humorous, but it also had a marvelous display of creativity. You know, it's not easy to write. You know, when you think, when you throw in, you know, dialogue, it's not easy also to be consistent. You know, with this poem here, it's somewhat lengthy, but you keep us within the essence of the poem. We gravitate to the poem, you know, and it's not easy to do a poem of this length to keep the reader, you know, and focus there.
My goodness, Frank, I'm so flattered. I mean, to compare me this style to Oscar Wilde is beyond my expectations. I wrote this based on the stories my friend would tell me of these endless social gatherings.
Yeah.
I used to go to them once upon a time when I was working. You would get pressed into, you could get conscripted to these things. And I remember many times standing in the corner next to a potted plant, you know, just wishing the thing were over. And the little comments, I don't know what made me do those, but it just, it seemed to me, it was like I was interacting with the protagonist. I had a good time writing this, and when I gave it to my friend, he said it was spot on, and he loved it. Actually, I have to credit him with the line, "Bourbon flowing as a tributary to the river of wine." He gave me that.
If I can say really briefly here, just really quickly, the reason why I say Wilde, because Wilde was known to write in his plays a lot of satire, and it would be in the form of a diatribe, you know, a diatribe, but he was known for writing in his plays using satire in this type of nature.
Thank you. Exactly. He did a play called Lady Windermere's Fan.
Yes.
And
yes,
it was
exactly.
Remade into a movie called A Good Woman. And it's quite well done. And it's funny because I did not know the genesis of it was an Oscar Wilde play. And as I'm listening to the dialogue, I said the same thing. I said, oh, my God, this sounds like Oscar Wilde. So I researched it, and sure enough, it was based on Lady Windermere's Fan. Dialogue is so crisp and so satirical and so witty. It really is. If you want to read something really witty, read Lady Windermere's Fan.
Okay.
Thank you, Bobby. Okay, Frank.
Thank you.
I'm going to put Sawa's poem up here, if you wouldn't mind, please.
Oh, you want me to read Sawa's? Do you want me to do the French version, or you want Naomi to do that? It depends on.
Jerry, you could read the English, and Naomi, you can read the French if you don't mind.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I can read French, but I'll let Naomi do it.
Frank,
yeah, that's
together.
What I'm saying. That's why I thought about that. All right, this is a poem called Black Clouds, Des Nuages Noirs, and it goes like this. I'm not sure if this is intended this way, but it goes like this. In English and French, black clouds are dark memories of long ago choked back her emotions. And squeezed her breath, she breathed them out with her tears to plant flowers in her heart.
Des mémoires sombres de jadis, comme des nuages noirs, retouffèrent ses émotions et serrèrent son souffle. Elle les a expirées avec ses larmes pour planter des fleurs dans son cœur. End poem.
Yeah.
Beautifully done, both of you. Fantastic reading. And how touching is this poem, you know, she's crying out the, she breathed them out with her tears, crying out, you know, these dark emotions, dark memories and black clouds. And then, you know, to plant flowers in her heart. Just a beautiful poem, a fabulous brevity. What did you think, Bobby?
I agree. It was a exquisite brevity. But then again, Salwa always writes exquisite brevity. The woman has such a gift for packing so much emotion into such compressed spaces. It's truly astonishing. And this is no different. I mean, it's so beautiful, so expressive, so delicate. And that's why I wrote a poem about the way she writes. Oh, I forgot to mention, I wrote I don't know if it was on this show or my show with Neutron. I think it was Neutron. Martha was on, and we read something that reminded her of her late husband. And so when during the week, I was writing a brevity for a contest, it reminded me of what Martha had said. So I wrote the brevity and dedicated it to Martha.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool.
And I sent it to her, and she really liked it. But no, Salwa's got, she's amazing. She really is. And you guys did such a beautiful job.
Absolutely. Thank you, Bobby. And Naomi, what did you think?
Oh, Salwa, she always amazes me with how she can translate a poem, you know. Black clouds of dark memories and des mémoires sombres de jadis. It says, I don't want to be biased here, but it's in French, it says it so much better than in English. But I mean, she translates, the way she can translate poetry, I mean, translating poetry, and because I'm a translator too, and plus a teacher and a writer, but to translate, when I get a song to translate, I get quite a few songs, and less poems, but I mean, I get songs, and they're so hard to translate, like poetry, because, you know, you have to keep the same flow, you have to keep the same intention there, the same meaning, you have to find the exact words, and the way she does it every time, I mean, bravo to her, you know, because it's not an easy thing to do. I'd rather translate like a big document from a lawyer's cabinet or a scientific thing, you know, then translate a song or a poem, because it's so hard to do. And so bravo, Salwa. And her personality reflects in her writing. She seems to be such a beautiful person, you know, such a loving, beautiful person. And you feel it through her poetry. It's always so tender, so light and so so airy and so just so beautiful, you know, her
Serial.
Wording. Yeah, just Serious. So beautiful. Yeah. So I just love Saul Watts.
I agree wholeheartedly, Naomi. And Frank, what did you think?
The words left here.
Oh, we're losing Frank.
Yeah. Frank, we've lost you. We can't hear you. You were there for a second.
Am I feeling... Hello?
Hello?
Sorry.
All right.
You're back.
Okay. There you go. I'll be brief here. It's always a constant fight with the phone. I just thought it was a wonderful, wonderful brevity. It was a beautiful piece.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Frank. Appreciate that. Okay, yeah. The next write-up is by Titus, and he has a sampler.
The Cheer of Christmas 4. Looking forward to Christmas as I do, but not for the same reasons, have you know. The sheer excitement on the faces who enjoy the build-up better if there's snow. Observe I do of children, mums and dads, whose expectations does the build-up bring. The welcoming of friends which kindness adds, the splendor when the carol singers sing. To see the wrapped-up parcels on the floor, around the tree of plenty glee fulfills. Not yet, a better build-up finding more is what was not expected bar the frills. What I would do for old time's sake to peep, contentment shall for all our hurries fast, the everlasting moment secrets keep, before it's said unwrapping them at last. There is with fascination much to see, how Christmas trees have lit, what garlands tell, how long or short our Christmas ought to be, as far away from wishing it farewell. And so my observations of you all will pardon me from celebrating both, since Christmas Day and Boxing Day befall, before too long a will forsaken sloth.
That's such a beautiful read, and, you know, this is a tender and heartfelt write. You know, you can feel the admiration he has as he peers into the Christmases of life, and I thought it was just beautifully done. What did you think, Naomi?
Titus. Titus is Titus, right? He just his voice, too, you know, bravo on that read. He just reads so amazingly every time. And it's so eloquent and elegant, very elegant. You know, it's just the way he puts these words together. You know, this is a beautiful, beautiful write. You know, and I always look forward to Titus's poems and his writing. Just a beautiful piece here.
Well said. Thank you, Naomi. And Bobby, what did you think?
Oh, it's like listening to Dickens. It is so classic.
Mm-hmm.
It is. I mean, he has, of course, his speaking voice is superb. The writing is so classical in its feeling. You feel as though you're looking through the window at a Victorian Christmas. And you're seeing all the old-fashioned frills and fripperies and decorations and resplendent things that everyone does for Christmas. So it is festive, but it's also reminiscent. It's a very nicely done piece. I really enjoyed it.
Well, that was a great comment. Thank you, Bobby. And Frank, what did you think?
What's been said.
I'm sorry, Frank, you're cutting out again.
I do apologize for that. Can you hear me? If you want, Gray, I'll just go ahead and stay on to the show.
We can hear you now.
Yeah, we can hear you.
I don't know. Okay. I do apologize. It's just a phone. I really like the piece. You know, I agree. He has a soothing cadence to his tone of voice, but also in his narratives. You know, I like the way he just. It's very eloquent. I do agree with what Naomi said. He brings an eloquence to this poem. You know, in Trotter's poetry as well. And I can't really, fathom, Titus another way. He just has a brilliant way of just using metaphors and using words, you know, to just bring us marvelous stories each and every time and transforms them into poetry. But he has a wonderful ability. I truly believe.
Well, I got most of that comment, Frank, and it was great.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
I'll try to stay on as I can, my friend, as long as my phone allows me to.
All right. Appreciate that. Okay, and this is called The House No One Knows, and it's by Night Charmed. Round the old river road, winding, climbing, sweeping, always just repeating, find the house that no one knows if answers are what you are seeking. Above one, rise, but below the next, sit a house beyond the rest. A path does wander here and there, yet follow. Not lest you despair. To find a house that no one knows, no path to follow, you should know. For when a path is made, you see, that house will just up and flee, chasing after all have failed. But when you sit and ponder deep, an invitation you shall reap. No path is laid. Yes, this is true. For the path you see lies in you. That was beautifully done. I like that. I like how it's the path to yourself, you know, that he's getting at, the house of you. Always need to take a different trail there, I think. And I thought it was just excellent, right? What did you think, Naomi?
Oh, I just thought this was an amazing metaphor. You know, it starts out like, at first I thought it was like some kind of horror, like Edgar Allan Poe, you know, but it's really, in a way, you know, the old house, you know, and the house that no one knows, but it's a very philosophical piece, you know, wow, and the whole way he brought about that, that message, you know, that the path that you seek, the way home, you know, inside of yourself, the way to yourself, well, that secret, you know, it lies within you. It's only you that can find your own path, and nobody else can find it for you, your path, whether it's, you know, to anywhere in life, you know. Just the way he went around it to come to that conclusion there, wow, this is just a thud. Brilliant, witty, right. So bravo, Night Charmed. Bravo, bravo.
Well said. Thank you, Naomi. And Bobby, what did you think?
I agree with Naomi. At the onset of the poem, I was mindful of Brigadoon, where the house comes and goes in a ghostly fashion and appears once every 100 years, but the sustained metaphor when you stay the path through the piece, it is profoundly philosophical, and it is almost Zen-like in the way it approaches looking for inner definition, inner peace. No path is laid. yes, this is true, for the path you see lies in you. Like I said, very Eastern in its approach to self definition, self fulfillment, discovering one's true self, one's true path. But done in such a way that its approach is Westernized. So it's a very unique, it's a unique piece. I really enjoyed it.
Excellent comment, Bobby. Thank you. And Frank, what did you think?
Yes. I also got that feeling there, the poem itself. It started off a bit haunting there. But then the poem progressed. It progressed into more of a psychological poem there. You know, it's introspective there. But it also gives you the insight as well of what a struggle is to find oneself, you know. So I really thought that he did a marvelous job there with, you know, display of the wordplay, the metaphors that he brought in here. And above all, just giving us that moral there in the end, for the path you see lies in you. I thought he did an excellent job.
Thank you, Frank. That was a great comment. Okay, I've got the next write-up, and this is by CamDin1175. Do you think you could give that a go, Naomi?
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Is that a real word?
just remember Farajaka. Farajaka, there you go.
That a real word?
No, I'm
thinking
it's not.
No. Okay, there are 1,150 words in the entire English language. Yet I can never find the proper term for when I am more than sorry. My apologies. I am sorry for breaking your heart into pieces, into shards, into fragments of what was and not what could be. I'm sorry for bringing you to tears. I'm sorry I am such a disappointment. There is no combination of words that will ever describe how it feels to know it is impossible to tell someone how sorry isn't enough to reach the goal you are trying to accomplish. That moment when you know that they can understand how much they mean to you, and how terrified you are that you messed up so badly that they will never love you the same. How do you describe to your lover, your parent, your friend, the feeling you get when you instantly regret something that bubbled up in the base of your throat and slipped onto your tongue? You didn't even have the time to taste the bitterness. Like the opposite of swallowing a pill, the instant in your mouth, but long-lasting effects in the air between you. How am I supposed to just say sorry and expect them to understand? Sorry never meant enough to me. It is so easy to just say I'm sorry or I apologize. The word we create needs to be so difficult to pronounce that just by saying it, we are proving that we are trying. Maybe, for example, what if we made this a tradition of honor rather than apologizing for what we did wrong? So selfishly turning the scenario back to ourselves, begging the other for forgiveness. We show the other our great form of respect. Ah, good. Frank, Fracastralopiasodania. I love you. You mean more to me than life itself. You remind me of the better person I can be, rather than the fool I once was. You deserve the utmost form of respect. You deserve the world. I'm sorry. I didn't give it to you. Frasca Telopedilia. He says audio coming soon. Yeah. He said that a year ago.
Wow. That was a beautiful read, Naomi. A good effort on the title. You know, mm-hmm. But this is written by a 14-year-old, which kind of baffles me how deep they are.
Wow, my gracious. So deep.
Yeah. I know, right? It's hauntingly deep and powerful in its insight and its descriptors. Just a powerful, powerful poem. What did you think, Bobby?
I enjoyed the poem. I really did. I think there's a lot of thought and introspection written into this piece, considering the youthful. The youthfulness of the author. I think, in selecting this this word, that they've created a verbal speed bump here. It's a distraction. You're so stuck on trying to pronounce this that it distracts you from the beauty of the piece. That it's decided. So I think it's an unfortunate choice of titles. I think you got to truncate this by about 7 or 8 syllables.
Okay.
But I understand what their point is. That they're trying to create a term for something that has no label. And like I said, it's a beautiful piece. But I think the title and the word that they've concocted here is it's an unfortunate distraction.
Right. Yeah. Thank you, Bobby. And Frank, what did you think?
All I can say is first Castrolopicus Italidea. There you go, Bobby. That's what you said.
Oh, I wasn't having problems with it. I just think it's distracting.
I think it was intentional. I think this poem's about, you know, the poetess was 14 years old. You know, degree that she could, you know, just give us insight into the mind of someone of that age. It was a poem. You know, there is that sense of going to lament there, but also there is that, you know, when you say you deserve the utmost form of respect, you deserve the world, I'm sorry I didn't give it to you. The lament is there, but there's also the awareness of the lament in the first place. And I don't know if that lament had the name of Fuscatrolopicus Saladena. I don't know if that's the name. But it is one hell of a name to it.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you, Frank. Okay, so I have the next write-up, if you wouldn't mind, please, Bobby.
Not at all. Let me go. It doesn't have any polysyllabic terms in it, does it?
No.
Hey, verbal speed bumps. Okay.
No.
I can't. Okay. Here we go. Let me open this up. There it is. Your brain is your heart's best friend, by Ms. Dietra Reed. When fears, tears, or sadness make one want to blame nouns instead of doing verbs, what? Could it be inside the red, hot, quiet of the storm, there is a moment of clear reflection? in the pure acceptance of your brain, knowing your intentions, your hopes, and it not mattering of my failure to attain it, my heart can openly break, but with the guarantee that it will stand guard until it heals or recovers enough to live. End of poem.
Beautiful read, Bobby. And, you know, this is, it's beautiful imagery, and it's intellectual and emotional. It's a fascinating take on the brain and the heart and their roles in our lives. What did you think, Naomi?
Yeah, I think this was very witty, very clever, right? The fears, tears of or sadness makes one want to blame nouns instead of doing verbs. What? Yeah, it's you blame things, people, nouns, instead of performing actions to like fix the situation. You know, you blame. You put the blame on people, you put the blame on things, you put the blame on the weather, you put the blame on, you know, instead of taking actions to that will help you deal with the situation. That's what I found out of this poem. And, the brain is your heart's best friend. It means, you know, like take the time to think with your brain, instead of just gushing out with your heart, you know, because your heart sometimes has these reactions that, you know, you don't really think deeply about. You just do it, you know, because you go with your heart instead of with your brain. That's what I got out of the poem. That I found this really a brilliant, brilliant write. So bravo.
Thank you, Naomi. And Bobby, what did you think?
I also found it an intriguing approach to a comparison, the balance of your intellect versus your emotions. And I know we're at very often we're each at loggerheads with that. I remember hearing something somewhere that I thought was profound. When someone asked if you knew that this person, oh, I know what it was a film. The character was asking her mother if she knew that her stepfather was abusing her. Why did she not listen to what she was being told by her daughter? And the mother's response was, I thought, profoundly philosophical. She said, because sometimes we believe what we need and not what we know. And so here you have your brain believing what you know, but your heart wanting to believe what you need. And this brevity really says that quite uniquely.
Well said. Thank you, Bobby. And Frank, what did you think?
Yes, I think it's a very philosophical piece. You know, I think the message is spot on. It's very Stonian. You know, I like every line here, but I think the line itself that represents this poem is the one, the second one there. There is a moment of clear reflection, adding a question mark. This poem is meant for you to reflect. It's meant for you to really dig into the deeper, you know, core of your mind, not just the heart there, but to really do some pensive thoughts there. I thought it was a great piece,
yeah.
Right?
Thank you, Frank. Okay, Frank, I have the
welcome.
Next write up, if you wouldn't mind, please.
All right. If I break up, just tell me here. It's called ICD, you know, by Rob Asser, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, here we go. I see deer, eight of them, nippy, nat, frost, fine, gruff, white toes bobbing in the morning trees. Papa deer and mama leading the feet, eager to have a go at the frozen berries dying out on the wasted vines yonder. And I see shuttles slanting off the balmy trees, blanking the backs of the wanderers. There is a hump and hue in which I ride, now ploughed with hoofs prints. This lasts for 20 minutes, and they're all gone till the dusk. The berries are softer, the sky is darker, and the night crawls with hunger. End of poem.
Beautiful read, Frank. This is a beautiful poem about watching some deer in their daily lives. Deer are beautiful, and, you know, they've been around millennia with, you know, mankind, and I don't know how they've survived, but they have, and it's just fascinating to me. Beautiful, right? What did you think, Naomi?
Well, I live in deer country. I suppose you too, Greg? So, you know, we see a lot of deer. And, oh, wow, this is just so beautiful, you know. And the way, I just love the ending, you know. Then they are gone till the dusk. When the berries are softer, the sky is darker, and the night growls with hunger. Oh, I just love those finishing lines there. But this is just fantastic. You know, it just takes you on a journey. It just takes you there. There's emotion that beams through this poem. You feel the emotion. You feel the, you know, you're just there, you know, and it's not just words on a paper and imagery, it's emotion too, and that's hard to do in poetry, you know, especially in a poem where you're describing a scene, to get so much emotion through to the reader. That's difficult to do, and here it was brilliantly done, because I felt the emotion here, and so just bravo a million times for this write. I just loved it.
Thank you, Naomi. And Bobby, what did you think?
I hit something wrong with my chin, and my screen vanished. I really like this. It reminded me of the naturalist Rites of Swan Song, which is another AP poet who does a lot of writing about the nature and does it with such elegant visual imagery. This reminds me of his work. It does conjure the picture of the deer family, and you're right, the ending of it is so touching. They're gone until dusk, when the berries are softer and the sky is darker, and the light night growls with hunger. I love that last line, and I agree. Deer are beautiful unless you look out your dining room window and see the ass end of one buried in your daylilies. Then they're not so beautiful. Then you run out there crying, shouting, and waving your hands. But by that time, they have dined on the deer buffet. Fortunately, have not eaten all of your daylily buds. have left their impact on your table.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe that. I looked out my window one morning and I'm like, what is that dog doing? And I'm like, no, wait a minute. And
yeah.
Realized it was a doe in there having breakfast.
Well, then at IHOP.
Sorry, Frank, what did you say?
No, I'll be brief here. I know that, you know, you've got very few a minute or so. I just say the poem was just wonderful. I like that whole notion of just bringing up a narrative of, you know, looking in the, you know, in a moment, This was basically a poem about a moment, or a very few moments, 20 minutes, of an experience that perhaps most of us have experienced and some have not. That's beautiful, you know, when you get to experience something like this that's really not really planned, something that just happens out of the blue at times. But when you get to experience, you know, whether or not it's your own, you know, whether or not you choose or not, whether or not it's rare or whether it's just, you know, you get to interact with nature's, you know, beautiful creatures, the animals there, in this case, the deer. I always recommend those who get a chance to do that to just enjoy it, even if they are at times unwelcome visitors, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, thank everybody for calling in tonight to share your hearts, your minds, your voices, most especially your time. I appreciate you all. Much love, everybody.
Take care, my friends. Well, I love you. Take
okay.
care.
Great
night. Night.
Well,
good night,
everybody.
Take care,
good night,
Naomi.
Take care.
Good night, Naomi.
Take care.
Hey, Bobby.
Bye.
Hey,
Bobby, take care. Craig as well. Take care, my friends. Have a good one.
All right, good night. Bye, everybody.